Welcome, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. Can I have everyone's attention? Thank you. Thank you. Just a reminder, there is overflow next door, but we'd love to have you in here if you would rather be with us in person. Welcome, everyone. I'm Condalia Courtney. I'm the Global Product Manager for the Ion Exchange Resins business in DuPont, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be here with you all today. I'm thrilled to be here among so many amazing leaders, and notably, 60 of my colleagues from DuPont. At DuPont, our purpose is to empower the world with the essential innovations to thrive. Delivering on our purpose requires more than just leading edge science and really good business strategy. It requires empathy to really understand the world's problems. It requires intuition to see around the corners when we're charting path into uncharted territory. And it requires collaboration, the kind that creates win-win situations. In short, it requires women. The world needs us. This conference is an amazing opportunity that blends practical tools, advice, experience, where we can all learn how to be better in our career, better at home, better across all of our companies. But while we're charging hard and we're changing the world, we also need to take a break and focus on ourselves. And that's why I'm so excited for this panel today. Happier now. Embracing the everyday. I'm delighted to welcome up Natalie Kogan in a few minutes. Natalie is the co-founder of Happier, a leading wellness company on a mission to make millions of people happier by helping them find, create, and celebrate more small, amazing moments in everyday life. While Natalie brings science to the pursuit of happiness, it's grounded in real-world experience. At just 13 years old, she fled to the United States from the Soviet Union. And prior to founding Happier, she reached the highest levels of career success at McKinsey, Microsoft, and in the traditionally male-dominated venture capital world. Wow. But her second act has already proven to be more impactful. More than 1 million people have turned to her, to Happier's online courses, training programs, app, and now to Natalie's new book, Happier Now, for guidance on their journey to happiness. We have an amazing hour in store for you, but right now, please put your hands together for Natalie Kogan.
Okay, that made me teary. I speak a lot, you guys, gals, but standing here listening to that amazing introduction, but more than that, looking at, I'm not on. I'm always on, but my mic is not on. Now I'm here. Okay, let's move at center stage. Okay, I don't know. Is this better? No? Yes, okay. Thank you. Thank you for speaking out and not sitting there for 10 minutes being like, I can't hear her. What I was saying was I speak a ton, but I got goosebumps standing, not just listening to that really kind introduction, but looking at this incredible room of 1,000 women and some male allies, and just my heart is kind of bursting right now a little bit with the gratitude for all of you for making this choice to invest in yourself today, for making this decision. I know your to-do lists are long. I know you have a lot of responsibilities, for giving this opportunity to invest in yourself and for coming to our session. So I'm so, so grateful. And I have a gift of being able to chat with you for a few minutes before I bring out the unbelievable panel that we have. We had a pre-panel call, and I got off it, and my 15-year-old daughter, my home office, she was nearby, and I walked out, and I said, oh, my God, and she was like, what happened? I said, these women are going to be amazing. So these women are going to be amazing. But before I bring them up, I want to share just a tiny bit of my journey with you, because the thing is, the facts of my journey to this moment might have been different, but I actually think the more I share my journey, the more I learn, we're all walking a very similar path. And, you know, I think it might be easy for you. I come up here, I'm wearing yellow, my book is yellow, This morning I give a talk at a breakfast. I walked in, they're like, oh, there's our happiness lady. I get called that a lot. I think it might be easy to assume I'm naturally a really happy person. Well, I'm not. In fact, I want to start by being really honest with you and telling you that for most of my life, I wasn't just not happy. I struggled with like feeling a moment of contentment. And I kind of got on this journey, as you mentioned in my bio. When I was 13, we came to the U.S. as refugees after spending 2.5 months in refugee camps. And here we were in the projects on food stamps and welfare, and my parents got very busy trying to get jobs. I was 13 and a half. At 13 and a half, you don't want to move across the street. And here I was. I spoke almost no English. The English I spoke came out of my mouth with like a really weird accent. I was in eighth grade. Remember the kindness and compassion of eighth graders? Yeah. I do too. My only identity at the time was to be a great student. All of a sudden, I was failing all my classes because I couldn't understand a word. And so I just was, what I remember, I was just so overwhelmed with sadness and anxiety and just this desire to not feel that. And the opposite of all that was to feel happy. So I didn't know how to do that, but there were these like inklings of hope. Anytime I achieved something, I felt great. And so after a while, I kind of got this life mantra of I'll be happy when. I'll be happy when I start speaking English and no one laughs at me. Actually, my dream, I just need to own it. My dream was to speak English like Alyssa Milano's character on Who's the Boss? I just need to own this, because that TV was my teacher. So I don't know, you guys be the judge. You let me know afterwards if I'm coming close. I'll be happy when I get good grades again, when I am at the top of my class in high school and college and get good jobs and make my parents happy and proud. And for 20 years, I lived my life according to this I'll be happy when. And I just want you to pause for a moment and think, how often do you catch yourself thinking I'll be happy when? Right? I'll be happy when I get a different job, finish a project, get home after a tough commute, take a vacation, redecorate, meet my perfect soulmate, lose weight, gain weight, whatever it is. It's very common for us to think that. And I lived that way for 20 years. And as you shared, I built a very successful career. Happier is my sixth company that I either started or was part of. I worked at some amazing companies like Microsoft, McKinsey. I married my college sweetheart, Avi. We just celebrated our 18th wedding anniversary. We had a beautiful daughter named Mia, who we were just talking to Reshma. She would have liked to be right here today. My book's dedicated to her, and it ends with a letter to her for those of you who are looking forward to reading it. And so on the outside, I was living this amazing life. Right, and we were talking, you'll hear a lot of us share, like, I came from nothing. I came from being a refugee, from living in the projects. And I was in magazines and on TV, and I was buying my parents nice vacations and cars, and I was being able to take care of my grandparents. And you'd think that all of that was incredibly joyful, but it wasn't. And I'm not saying I didn't feel joy when I achieved something, I did. But then it was like this bubble, this happiness bubble, and it would just pop. Do you ever feel that way? Of course you do, because that's part of our human experience. I didn't know what I was doing wrong, so my answer was, I get it. I'm just not doing enough. Because I thought that happiness is a prize you get for achieving enough, so since I wasn't happy, I just said, I'm not doing enough. So I started more companies. I started a company, I have this scene in my head. My daughter, Mia, was 2 months old. She was, the only way she would stop screaming and crying was if I rocked her in the bouncy seat very hard with my foot. Anyone have kids like that? Like, it looked like child abuse from the outside, because she had to be like, really, that was the only way she would stop. So I was doing this. I had my job as a managing director at a venture capital firm, the only woman at my firm, the only woman on many boards. We'd started a publishing company with my husband that I convinced him to start with me out of our illegal sublet in New York City. And I was under contract with Hyperion to write a book for women. You are right to laugh. This is not impressive. This is someone trying to earn her own right to feel good about herself. Because at the core, I felt that I just hadn't earned the right to feel happy. My entire self-worth was attached to my achievements. And I had this perfect vision of myself, right? We're gonna talk about perfection, that eventually I would just achieve all the right things and it would be perfect and I'd feel amazing. And it just kept not happening. And so my answer was to do more and be harsher to myself until I couldn't anymore. I start my book by sharing something that's still very hard for me to talk about, but it's my story of complete and utter burnout.
as a CEO of a company called Happier, who was just on the front page of the New York Times tech section with all her Happier car and the Happier story, and I was hardly functioning. At this point, I don't know how much I slept, when I ate, I was blacking out. I wasn't present as a leader, and probably the most painful thing is I wasn't present as a mom. I'd lost my ability to keep pushing. Because in all of this journey, I actually never learned one of the core essential skills that I now teach as part of the five happier skills, and that is self-compassion. And that is learning that I am not perfect and never will be, and learning to embrace myself as a human being. And that's what we're here to talk to you about. And I want to leave you with one thought before I bring up our amazing panelists. Because I will not, if you know me, and there are some amazing humans in the audience who are friends, which I'm so grateful for, my colleague Debbie, you'll see her walking around the room taking pictures of you. If you've met me for 5 minutes, you know I won't let you out of my sight without telling you this. You cannot give what you don't have. The biggest excuse I had for neglecting my own emotional health was that, well, I'm taking care of my family. I'm taking care of my team. I'm building companies. I was this very proud martyr. And I gave myself permission to live this lie that I could struggle on the inside and beat myself up and be a great mom and be a great leader. Bullshit. That was bullshit. Because we are all connected as human beings. Our emotions are contagious, the good and the bad. And if you think that you're struggling inside, you're beating yourself up, you're not perfect enough, you're harsh to yourself, but you can not show that to your team at work, you cannot show that to your friends or your family, that's your lie that I want you to wake up from, and I'm so excited to share some of the thoughts that we will. That was my greatest mistake. And so the thing I want to leave you with before we come up and start this conversation is if you think that it is selfish to pursue your happiness, if you think it's too self-indulgent to embrace your imperfections, to be kind to yourself, I thought it was. I thought it was for the weak. I thought it was a ridiculous idea. Then just think about all the people you care about in your life, at work and outside of work, and remember that you cannot give to them what you don't have yourself. So with that, I'm so excited to bring up our panelists. If you guys would come up, let's give them a round of applause. I'm going to briefly introduce them. And if you guys would come up, and then I will only briefly introduce them because we have so much to talk about. You guys have all the bios and our various Instagram, Twitter, social handles in the brochures. We are all, I think most of us are on Instagram, but you can find our handles. So I'm just quickly going to introduce the panel. Are you guys fighting over your mics already?
No. It's very imperfect drop.
I get goosebumps. I can't believe I get to be surrounded by these amazing humans. So Mary Laura is an incredible writer whose book, I love the title. You're going to have to tell us where that came from. I Miss You When I Blink has come out recently and is an incredible collection of personal stories and essays, a lot about being imperfect. Reshma is the founder of Girls Who Code and an author of a book that my teenager thinks is the coolest book ever, which is Brave Not Perfect. And Nicole is, I love having Nicole here because Nicole works for a large company called Accenture, which when I was growing up in college, I thought like the consulting companies were the evil companies. Then I went to work for one. And Nicole works for Accenture, but actually has a passion and a background in improv comedy. And we're going to hear about all of that. I love that. Ooh, reaction.
It's not stand-up, so.
I don't know. And so just before we dive in, I want to tell you, we're going to talk for about half an hour. Then there is time for questions. We are going to be cut off exactly at 12:30 because three of us, Mary Laura, Reshma, and I, will be doing book signings right after this panel at 12:30. So if you want to catch up to us and chat with us, run over there with us. And that's coming up to have your book signed is a great way to chat with us. I'm just saying this because we can't stay after because sometimes we do. All right, let's dive in. I want to start with a quick little rapid-fire question to each one of you before we dive into individual questions. And I want to ask this question. I want to hear what piece of advice you would give to your younger self that is in the area of, this striving for perfection or happiness. I'll leave it at that.
You can
go that way, sure.
I was thinking this morning about that whole idea, because someone asked me last night, if you could talk to your younger self, what would you say? I think I would take young me and I would grab her by the shoulders and I would go, quit more things.
Quit
because
more things.
When I was young, I would agree to do something and, you know, follow through on it, and then I would want to move on to a next phase, but I wouldn't let go of the phase before it. Mm-hmm. And there were like relationships that I got in that the breakup would be kind of fuzzy because I'd be like, oh, we're not going to see each other anymore except for when we are. and jobs, like I can remember quitting a job early on and going, I'm not going to work here anymore. And my boss was like, but would you still consult for us sometimes? And I was like, yeah, of course I would. And you can't move from one phase to the next until you have shut down the first phase. And it has taken me so long to learn to make clean breaks. And I really didn't know how to do it in my 20s.
That's powerful. Four things, love it.
I think I would tell my younger self to keep doing things you suck at, right? Mm. I feel like, and for me it was a cartwheel. I was a little bit overweight as a kid, and gymnastics class was just painful. And I wanted to do this beautiful cartwheel, but I just couldn't get it the first try. I remember a bunch of girls started laughing at me, and then I stopped. And every time I saw that little Mary Lou Retton, my heart would just sink. You know what I mean? Because I loved her so much. But I think from the time that we're young, when we try something and it doesn't come to us right away, we tell ourselves that we can't. Mm-hmm. And we start giving up before we even try. Mm-hmm. And the later we get into life, we start confusing things that we're good at with the things that we like. Yep. Men know the difference of this. Most men I know, they have something that they like to do that they suck at. Golf, right? They can't play golf. We know that. We don't have those things. Most of us won't even go to an exercise class till we're in shape. And so we find ourselves, I mean, I certainly found myself in my 40s with like not knowing what it felt like to be alive anymore. Right? Not knowing what it felt like to have like the wind blowing through my hair and doing something, because like feeling afraid is like feeling alive. Mm. And so my recommendation to really, if you want to feel that fear and that sense of life, is to intentionally go do something that you suck at.
It has taken every ounce of my self-discipline to not ask you to do a cartwheel right now.
Oh, my God.
I just want to be open about that. I just want to say this is all the willpower I have. I'm going to have a chocolate donut right after this.
Unfortunately, you can go to my Instagram page and see me doing it and
love
laugh.
It. Love it. Nicole?
Super. Well, that was pretty fantastic. I would tell myself that it's okay to bring all of yourself into a situation, and I'll tell you why. When I started consulting at Accenture right out of school, I was a biomedical engineering major. I was a theater, my theme was theater, and fine arts. And I've been in shows, I was in improvisational comedy group performing all the time in Chicago. So when I started at Accenture, I checked all the theater part, because I was a very serious consultant. I was 22 years old, and I was pretty sure I was going to be responsible for transforming organizations. That is why they hired me, don't you know? And so I started, and I do believe I was very serious the first few years. And I had a phenomenal supervisor, whose name was Bill. And whenever we would go to lunch, it was like I was me again. Okay, I was, it was laughing. I mean, comedy is in my blood. We were always having a great time. And until one time when we sat down for lunch and he gave me feedback that, I love feedback, I just want to say. When it's positive, by the way. It was very clear on that. But the feedback I got was, you know, from a vice president of this organization, was that I'm very serious. And I'm like, why is that bad feedback, by the way? Just for the record, you know. He's like, and the comment that she had given to Phil was that, you know, I come to meetings, I always wore a suit, because I thought I had to dress the part.
Right.
And so I was very serious. There was very little like chit-chat. And I was like, we're designing an organizational model. Like, where are their jokes and roles and responsibilities, people? We have metrics, you know. And he said to me, and it's the first time it was really said to me, just be like who you are. You know, you can bring all of those sides of yourself to the table. And what I'll say about improv is, when I started, I wouldn't have even probably introduced myself as having an improv background. It's something that I did. It was old. I'm a very serious business person now. But over the past number of years, I have seen what I like to call an environment that could do with more improv, that could do with more skills that really allow people to be the best and bring the best out of themselves, that are positive, that are inspired. It's how I was trained as an actor, doing improv. And so I now look at it as a mission, and this is really about bringing all of myself to the table, is that in addition to being a life sciences, and I do a lot with organizations that are amazing, doing amazing things, I'm also bringing improv. And for me, that's bringing myself.
Mm. That's awesome.
I wish I found that a little earlier, but it was found.
So. But you said that with kindness, too.
I did say it with kindness.
Awesome, I love it. I'll share mine really, really fast because I have so many questions to ask you guys. But I do want to share this. The piece of advice I'd give to my younger self is to stop trying to be fearless. I actually think it's one of the worst pieces of advice we get as women. You know, I speak a lot. I speak a lot of women's conferences. They're always like, you know, posters like, be fearless. To be fearless, a little bit what you were saying, is to not be human. Because if you're going to do anything in your life that has any newness or meaning to you, it's going to be scary. And for so much of my life, I kind of thought to do something, I had to get to this like state of being where I wasn't afraid. And what are we afraid of? We're afraid of failure. Mm-hmm. We're afraid that how we will look, we will not look so perfect doing it. And there actually isn't a way to feel fearless if you're a human being trying new things, doing new things. There isn't a way. Fear is a natural emotion. Mm-hmm. And so the way that I would have liked to teach my younger self to think about fear is to look at it as a skill, to learn how to move through fear as a skill. I said in my earlier panel about entrepreneurship, learn failure as a skill. Mm-hmm. But just this message of be fearless, I actually think it prevents us from doing a lot of things we may not be perfect at, because what we fear is failure. So speaking of that, I want to dive into this perfectionism thing that we're so, what is it with us and women and perfection? Like, what is it that makes us so attractive? But we're not going to talk about that because we want to offer tangible advice. So Mary Laura, I want to ask you, I don't know if I was reading this in your book or in some of our discussion back and forth, but what I loved was how you have these very tangible ways to help someone to shift out of perfection. Because what I, when I began my own kind of journey of embracing myself as a human being versus some vision that I was trying to get to, like a lot of the, what I found there is like, was like, embrace your imperfections. Well, I don't know how to do that because I hate all my imperfections. Right. So, you know, this roll of my stomach over here, I don't know how to embrace it, right? So, totally okay to laugh because I hope everyone else thought of a body part we hate so much, right? So can you share like a tangible way, because you have so many, like you can't expect someone who's like, go, 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 everything is perfect to shift. So where do we start? What's a good starting point?
I love the way you put that. So if you are a perfectionist or even just a little bit of a perfectionist, what you may need right now more than anything else is rest. I feel like so many of us are just desperate for a break. And for most of us, that's the last thing we're willing to grant ourselves. And ideally, like long-term goal, what we're all here to learn about and work toward is reaching some higher plane where our self-worth isn't tied up in what we check off on a to-do list. And we don't lie in bed at night going, what have I done today? Okay, I did all the things, I'm good. Or what have I done today? I didn't do all the things, I'm a failure. That's great long-term goal. That's where we're headed. But in the meantime, short-term goal, if you are naturally a list-driven person, which I am like deep down in my bones, I will never not be a list-driven person.
Relate, love, yeah. Relate.
We're all like shaking our heads.
Yeah. Let that work for you. Mm. Let your perfectionism be your assistant instead of your boss. Mm. Rather than letting it like rule your life and you've got to do more and more and more things, if you're a list-driven person, it is okay to put on your to-do list, go to bed at 9:30. It's okay to put on your to-do list, listen to a guided meditation for 10 minutes. Take a walk outside. Mm. If you're gonna live and die by a checklist, which a lot of us just do, at least fill that checklist with healthy things and with things that create time and space, because no transformation can happen without time and space. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I had to make myself do. I have a very vivid memory of about a month after my first child was born, and I had gone cold turkey. I eventually would start freelance writing, but I had quit my full-time corporate communications job, and in that month, I had no job. And I was also extremely sleep deprived. And the abrupt stop in productivity had just jumped me upside down and messed with my head. And I remember walking into my kitchen and digging through the unopened mail and finding my little day planner, because this is when I used to keep paper day planners, and flipping to that day's date and writing in shaky handwriting, "Take shower." And then I went and I took my shower and I came back in the room with my hair dripping and I crossed it off. And I needed that high of crossing something off a list. Yeah. And maybe that's kind of cheating and that's not what we're aiming for long term, but at least it was something I really needed to do.
No, but I love that the way you offer that as a strategy. It's almost like a bridge, right?
Baby
that's
step.
What I mean. We can't, right?
So it's your Nicorette gum.
Put the stuff that you're resisting doing because it's not on your to-do list on your to-do list, right?
Yeah.
Which I love that. Reshma, I want to ask you, so I think this was in an interview you gave, or maybe in your book, I don't remember. I'm a groupie of Reshma, if you can't tell. You talked about, because I remember I like read it, brought it to my daughter, that you noticed that when men or young men write code, they'll make a bunch of mistakes, and then they'll call their, you know, supervisor, teacher, or they'll be like, "This isn't working, can you help me?" And that the girls, well, the teacher will come over and the screen is blank because they couldn't make it perfect, so they just rather not. And I just thought it was such a stark contrast, like, so I'd love for you to talk about, like, I think many women, we equate perfection with excellence, so we want to be excellent. Yeah. Can you give us a frame to think about it differently and talk about that a little bit?
And I think that, like, the origin point of perfectionism, like, is important. And I do think that we're socialized to be this way. And so we're not crazy, right, when we start engaging in perfectionism as work, because we don't really, this is what we know, you know? And so from the time that we're little girls, right, we're told to, like, you know, straighten our dress and fix our bow. And did you take that toy away from her? Like, give it back. You know, are you on that side? Sweetie, don't swing too high. And with our boys, we just tell them to, like, jump off the monkey bars, like, head first. And so when we're raising our girls, we're literally wrapping them up with bubble wrap. And it starts because we want to physically protect them, right? My friend just had a baby, and she's teaching her to walk, and she's walking behind her, and she's saying, "Be careful, honey. Be
like
careful,
this.
Honey. Be careful, honey." And then she's like, and then your face pops up, and I'm like, "Ugh, go, baby. Go, baby. Go, baby." But it's this, it's innate, right? But with our boys, we're trying to make them into men, and we're trying to make them into being fearless. I mean, go to a bar any night of the week, and a man will, you know, hit on you over and over again. You'll tell him to piss off, and they just keep doing it. They don't care, right? Like, they don't care. Whereas we are not comfortable with rejection, with failure, and with risk. And, you know, I think that there are huge consequences both in our personal life and in our professional life because of perfectionism, right? Studies show women will drop out of a major if they get a B in a single class. B in a single class. Every study shows that women are twice as likely to suffer from anxiety and depression than men. In work, we won't apply for a job unless we meet 100% of the qualifications, men, 60. So if we're waiting to be perfect to lead, if we're waiting to be perfect to live, we'll never close the leadership gap. And I think the solution to this, as crazy as it sounds, is bravery, is a whole heck of a lot of imperfection. Because in our mind, if we're not perfect, the whole world's falling apart. Right? We don't bring home-baked cookies, you know what I mean, that are like, the world's falling apart. If we don't say yes to our friend to walk her dog when we haven't slept in 5 days, the world is falling apart. If we send an email with a typo in it, a typo, and 5 emojis instead of like 9, we quickly go from "I'm stupid" to "I made a mistake" to "I'm gonna get fired" all in about 10 seconds. So we inflate, massively inflate the consequences for imperfection. Men, they don't give a fuck. Right? And, you know, honestly, two of my role models right now, Cardi B, who lives her life, no F's given, and Greta. Anybody see Greta on The Daily Show? Anybody watch her on The Daily Show? Talk about an embodiment of, I don't care what y'all think. I'm trying to save the planet. I don't care if you like me. I don't think you care if you think I look funny. I don't care if you think I'm too young. And to me, it's like all of that gets washed out of us.
Yeah.
But it's never too late. Because I think bravery is a muscle, and I think that we can recondition ourselves to let go of imperfection, let go of that voice in our head, and start just being ourselves.
Yeah. And I love that you talk about the voice in our head, because I was just thinking of a question I'm going to ask you, Nicole, but just I think of how much suffering we cause ourselves with the way that we talk to ourselves. Okay, when you were talking about sending the email with the emojis, like one of the things, you know, one of the five skills that I teach is self-compassion, self-care, and a core piece of that is how we talk to ourselves. And my teacher, when I was on my journey out of my really dark place, I have a teacher, you'll meet her in the book, her name is Janet, she's my spiritual teacher, my guide, and she gave me homework. Her homework was, I want you to notice how you talk to yourself. Oh, I hated this homework. Ew. First of all, selfish, self-indulgent, have to listen to myself. But I also hated it because I knew, I already knew, that the way I talk to myself, I would never allow for anyone else in my life. And I think so much of what we're talking about and so much struggle that I have endured, and you know, I work with so many women leaders, we work with a lot of companies and teams. Men, by the way, do this too, to a certain degree, but no one beats us as women at being so harsh towards ourselves, and the speed, as you said, with which we go from, oh, this was a mistake, to I'm the most incompetent human being on the planet. And I just want to share this, what you made me think of, because I can like see we're all like sitting around talking. I want to put this elephant like right here that, yes, we are conditioned. Yes, yeah. We get a lot of messages, but we are so amazing at causing our own suffering. Yeah. We are so good at beating ourselves up and overachieving at that. We're very perfect at that. And there, it's the small things, but they pile up. I was with my daughter a couple months ago, and we ran out to the car. I'd locked the car, forgot the keys. We were late. You know, it was one of those things, mornings, right? And I realized I'd left the keys. We're going to be even later. And I said, instead of saying it in my head, which I usually do, I said under my breath, oh, my God, I'm such a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And I saw her looking at me, and all the things flashed in front of my eyes of like, oh, my God, I'm teaching her to be harsh to herself.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, she's been to like 27 of my keynotes about self-compassion. What is she gonna think? But the point that I also recognize is if she had forgotten the keys, I wouldn't say to her, you're a fucking idiot.
Right.
Even if I was really upset, I'd be like, babe, come on, hurry up, go run and get the keys. And so I just think this awareness, and I teach this now as a skill, but it's coming up all the time, just awareness. The way that we experience more joy in the everyday, that we experience more contentment, is we have to stop creating our own harshness with how we talk to ourselves. So on the heels of that, Nicole, I want to ask you, just shifting a little bit from perfection into kind of how do we find joy in our everyday when we have ridiculous to-do lists, when we don't have a lot of time for breaks, when our inner voice may be beating us up. How do we, you know, you have a really demanding corporate job. What are some tangible things that you do to help you feel joyful, content, at peace in your day with yourself and maybe your team?
Yeah, that's great. I first of all, you gotta laugh more. My God, please, Lord. Somebody once said to me, you know, to be funny in a meeting room or a conference room, you have to earn that right. I mean, come on. Like, really, guys? I mean, like, we all have, there are tough jobs.
What's up with that imperfection over there, guys?
I know, seriously.
We're demonstrating.
I'm now going to put it under my butt so that does not happen.
I can't be comfortable.
See, that was funny, right?
That was funny. That was a good one.
I'm cute.
I'm serious, though. Like, it really does, you know, release the, you know, in your body makeup, your body chemistry, laughing is so important. It really is. It really can change the dynamic of a room or your relationship. And it's joy, you know, if for those of you who heard the opening keynote, that 1%, it's such a small thing to lighten a room. Mm-hmm. I once had a client who I hadn't met with yet, and a lot of my colleagues had, and said, this person is really tough, like really intimidating, really tough, really harsh, really doesn't like consultants. I mean, this is fantastic. I can't wait, right? And so I went into the space with all of these stressors, right? My whole body in complete like stress, like a robot. Hi, it's nice to meet you, you know? And what's going through my mind are just those words. Intimidating, harsh, doesn't want you there, like that, 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 that. And finally I said, this is after I sort of became more comfortable being myself as a human. I just said, you know, how was your weekend? Like what was really fun about your weekend, you know? And then she's like, I don't know about fun, but my neighbors came. Anyway, whatever that trigger about her neighbor party, like this whole thing, we wound up laughing. I never felt like this person was intimidating, harsh, didn't like me, didn't want me to be around. Because you know what? We just became two people in a moment. And I'll be honest, I find joy. I meet with new people all the time in my line of work where I'm just trying to figure out where to help, right? I love those interactions because I don't treat them like their work. They're two people trying to understand each other and ultimately trying to make the workplace a better place. I'll also tell you this, and this comes back to my how I've kind of decided to bring improv closer to me than it had been, which is this. I would encourage you, if you're in a career, and let's say you like 80% of it and 20% is kind of crappy stuff that you don't like, to love the 80%. And then to also look outside of what you're doing at work and ask yourself, where do you find joy elsewhere? Because somebody once said to me, you're never going to change who you are. I'm a perfectionist. I feel like we're in an AA meeting. Like, I'm a perfectionist. Hi, Nicole. Like, right, I don't know, it's been like 40-something years of it. But it's kind of who I am. I'm all in with everything that I do. And somebody once gave me the feedback of, this was good feedback. It was, you know what? You're not going to change who you are. You can change your company. You can change your industry. You can stay at home. Whatever you do, you're going to be who you are. You're going to want to put all in. It's never going to be enough, like blah, blah, blah. And so the advice was, get yourself a hobby. Mm-hmm. I do have a hobby. I have a husband. I have kids. And I have a dog I have to walk. No. Those are people in your family. For you, what is your hobby? Preferably a hobby with goals. Because if you're goal-oriented, you want the checklist, whether it's I'm going to run this amount or I'm going to, for me, being in improv and I've created workshops now, I'm working on a book, as I told Mary, like I'm creating joy outside of what I do. As I told you, I've married the two. But that way, I've filled my life with joy. And if I'm not in my 80% of the work that I love, I'm in that 20% crappy, I remind myself that it's actually not 100% of my life is this. Yeah. It's actually this. And I'm going to get through the crappy because I love this and I got this on the side.
Well, I love what you're talking about is, you know, one of the skills we're talking in the morning breakfast is gratitude. Right, what you're talking about, when you're going through something difficult, you remind yourself that there are things in your life that you're grateful for. And gratitude, it's one of the core skills that I practice and teach. It was my first skill on my journey coming out of my dark place. And gratitude is actually, what you're talking about is an active choice because our brains actually love to focus on what's wrong, including in ourselves. Right? How many times do you wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, go, oh my God, I look amazing today. Right? No, we go like, oh, my stomach's too fat, my eyes are too small, right? But it's not your fault, right? It's our brains have a negativity bias. We're much more attached and attracted to anything that's wrong because danger comes with negative stimuli, so our brain is looking for danger. So I love what you're talking about. It's actually making an active choice to not take for granted the things in your life or work that you do appreciate, and that's an active practice of gratitude because not only does it bring you joy, but it helps you get through the crappier times. Reshma, I would love for you to share in this context of how do you practice joy in the present, finding joy in the present moment. You have these cool bravery challenges. Mm-hmm. I've started doing them with my daughter. I just have to share hers. Hers last week was eating an olive. Oh. Rejected. reject it outright, but she was like, I did it. I ate one. It's disgusting. No more. But I was like, fine. So, but you have this great concept of bravery challenges. Can you give us a few in the context of like, how can we find, use them to find more joy in the present moment?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that bravery is a muscle that you have to build. And I think, you know, to build off what you said, it's like, you know, you can't be brave if you're tired. Yeah. And every woman I know is exhausted.
Yep.
We're exhausted. And we're more exhausted, I think, than we've ever been. Like, we don't go to our doctor's appointments. We don't take rest. Like, we don't do stuff for ourselves. And, you know, honestly, I think the bravest thing I did was after I had my baby, like, I could not lose the baby weight. You know, that whole thing, like, breastfeed and it falls out, like, lie, right?
Yeah, who invented that? Who said that?
And, you know, like, the best time for me to go to the gym was at 7:30 in the morning, right? It's when my dog Stanley wanted to go out, right? It's when my son Sean was waking up. Worst time for everybody else, but best time for me. And I finally just got the courage to walk out of the house and be like, y'all figure it out. So my one bravery challenge for you is to do something for yourself and do it at a time that is the most inconvenient for your family. No joke, right? Seriously. You know, number two, it's this idea of, like, imperfection. So I do want you guys to send an email that's consequential with a typo in it, and you'll see that nothing's going to happen.
You don't die.
Right? And the other thing is to remind yourself that, like, and to catch yourself when you're not being brave. I've been on a perpetual book tour since my book, Brave Not Perfect, came out. And I remember I was just finishing my West Coast tour. And I'm, like, dragging my husband and my son with me. And, you know, we get to the Delta desk. And the woman's like, you know, congratulations, Mr. Johnny, you've been upgraded. What do I do? I look at my husband. I'm like, baby, you go to the front of the bus. I'll sit in the back with Sean. 9 Paw Patrol episodes in, right? 100 freaking, you know, gummy bears. And I'm, you know, I'm looking at my husband. He's, you know, watching my favorite Lady Gaga movie, drinking like 6 glasses of wine, and I'm just pissed, right? And I'm not pissed at him.
Right.
I'm pissed at myself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I see you. You wanted to be the martyr,
yeah.
Right? You were guilty because you were doing what you love, and you thought you were being a bad mom, and so you wanted to take a hit. But what I did was I just marched to the front. I looked at my husband. I was like, switch now, right? I got that half a glass of wine in, you know what I mean? And listened to my favorite songs. And that was it. So part of it is just like, you know, bravery is a practice. You will fall on and off the wagon over and over and over again. And the last thing I'll just, I do think that this is something that I do something with your hands. Do something with your hands, whether that's building a shelf, or like, I built a Lego set with my son the other day. Yes, it's very annoying. I have a son, very off-brand, but it's okay now. My whole life is about girls, so it was hard. But it's funny how like life gives you what you need.
Yes.
Right?
The lesson you need.
And like God gave me exactly what I needed. And I realized, you know, how much as a young girl that I had told myself that I can't fix things, that I can't build things, that I can't create things, that I was perpetually in this damsel in distress mode. And little things like building a Spider-Man Lego set with my son that is really complicated for 7-year-olds, you know what I mean? has filled me with joy and with courage.
Yes.
In this very, like, interesting way where I kind of walk into work being a little Cardi B, like, all right, I got it.
Yeah.
You know, I built that Lego set last night. Like, bring it, you know?
But I love that you said that, and too, so I'm, like, trying to, like, pinpoint. And then we have, like, I think 4 minutes before questions because, Mary Laura, I want you to share how you practice joy, and then I'll share, and then we'll take questions. But Reshma, just to put a pinpoint, because I think these are such great, like, tidbits of advice, that it takes bravery to put yourself first. Because we're so amazing at being martyrs. And actually, if you dig deep, this is too much for a big room like this, but these are a lot of workshops that I do with women leaders. If you dig deep, this whole martyr thing, it actually is your ego making you feel really good about, oh, I'm suffering. You're actually wallowing in your suffering. That's what I learned. That it's actually not so service-oriented, and it takes work, that it takes courage to face that and to put yourself first. And if you remember what I said at the beginning,
You can't give what you don't have, so if you're worn out. And the other thing I love is creativity. There's so much research that shows that doing anything creative, anything, cooking, doodling, building Lego sets, I paint. I started painting 4 years ago. No one's been able to stop me. I now do it on stage sometimes. It's crazy, but there's so much research about how much joy we are filled with when we do something creative. Mm-hmm. Because it's at the core of what makes us human. It's also an amazing break. When you're doing something creative, you're definitely not going through your to-do list, yeah. right? So it's a way to rest, so I love that. So Mary Laura, what's one of the very tangible ways that you practice like feeling joy in the present moment?
You know what gives me joy, and this is, you won't meet a lot of writers who say this. Doing math gives me joy. Yeah. In this way.
Woo!
Thank you.
Hear that.
I wish my math teachers could have heard you clapping. Periodically, I do the math on what I spend my waking hours doing. Mm. And I don't have a ton of waking hours because I go to bed really early. I'm awake for maybe 16 hours a day. There came a point in my mid-30s where I realized, at the time I lived in Atlanta, Georgia, which is spread out kind of in the same way LA is, so lots of traffic. I realized I was spending up to 3 hours a day, 20% of my waking hours, in traffic. Mm. Sitting behind the wheel of my car, looking at the butts of other cars, going nowhere. And just like remembering it right now is causing me to seethe with rage. But doing the math on that and going, wait a minute, who in my life would I give the advice to, and say, do something you hate for 20% of your waking hours? I would never tell someone that. So that was a moment where I began to make a major shift. We now live in Nashville, Tennessee, which is a completely different scene. Tennessee. I no longer spend 20% of my waking hours in traffic. But that exercise and that realization kind of made me giddy. And periodically, I will stop and go, okay, what did I spend my time on today? Mm. It is just as important and strategic a decision to choose what you won't have in your yes. life as what
that.
You will.
That's awesome advice.
And doing that math can help you figure it out.
Because
awesome you got to get rid of the stuff that doesn't give you joy so
That's
you
right.
can free up time to do what does.
That's
yeah.
awesome advice. Awesome.
We're going to do questions. Before we do questions, I want to tell you two things. First, I cannot let you guys go without telling you that my fastest way from any feeling to joy is a moment of gratitude. I gave a talk at breakfast. I gave them homework. I'm going to give you the same homework. 3 gratitudes before your first email of the day. Before you read your first email of the day, can you jot down, share with someone 3 tiny things you're grateful for? The more specific, the better. It literally primes your brain with dopamine and serotonin. It is not possible to complain, feel sad, or feel grumpy, or afraid if you are grateful. So that's my, I can't let you leave the room without sharing that. We're gonna take questions. I have incentives for great questions. I have 3 copies of my book to give away to the people who are going to ask 3 great questions. The microphones are up in the front. My colleague Debbie will give them out. So run up, take your spots, because you get a copy of the book. And there are mics everywhere. I don't know if there is one there. There is one there. Okay.
I was going to ask a question, but we don't have a ton of time. So let's go straight to the audience, and we'll start with you.
Hi, I was gonna do this even before the book was on the table. But this is, I guess, a question for all of you or any of you. I currently have a 1-year-old at home, and I thought when she was a month old, you know, when I was writing down, take a shower, I was like, oh, I can't wait until she's 6 months old because I'll have so much freedom. Uh-huh. And now it's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait until she's 2 years old. So for the women who are really tired and exhausted and haven't slept in who knows how long, all of these ideas of like getting more rest and taking care of yourself, that's like really great to hear, but like how do you physically do that? And how do you not be a martyr in those moments when it's easy to just be a martyr? And how do you like overcome that? And is there an end to that at some point?
I mean, I have a 4.5
Debbie?
How old's your kid?
I have a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old.
Okay, you're happy.
I'm still waiting for rest.
I'm 11 and 13,
so I guess I'm the closest to you. So my son's 4.5. And I think the thing that I think is when I see it with me and my friends is oftentimes it's the guilt that gets in the way of the rest and the happiness and the other things. right? It's like we are rushing to get home, you know, feeling guilty. I'm constantly scheduling red eyes in planes and trains and time around my son. And I realize though when I get there, because I'm so damn tired, we're not with each other. So like I have just had to learn, because it's not about him. He's fine. He's like chilling with his dad, like his friends, like he's not missing me. I'm feeling guilty. I'm missing him. And so I think part of it is just making yourself go for a walk, making yourself do a girl's weekend. Like literally kicking and screaming, closing the door and taking a nap. You know what I mean? And like with eye patch, right? And just trying to schedule in time. So you're training yourself to be a little selfish. And I think it's a practice. And it does get better, I think, as they get older. It's certainly gotten better, but yeah. but you know, I think it's right. It's like it's never ending.
I want you to have hope, so I will say.
Yeah. No. I think it's never ending.
There's different things, right? I think there's different things.
The other thing is, I don't know. I take my son everywhere. I went on The Daily Show, and he's like throwing M&Ms at Trevor Noah. Like he is at every. I'm surprised he's not here. Part of that is because I don't want to feel like I'm missing out. And part of the other thing is I don't want to, it's messy. It sucks. It's messy. It's hard. It's complicated. It's beautiful. All of it. And the more we try to hide it and separate it and pull it and feel constrained, the more harder it is.
So, and I think also, not to interrupt, but I am interrupting you because we want to take more questions.
Sorry.
It's just micro breaks, right? Micro breaks, right? Really, really short.
Yes.
Short breaks matter a lot. When you take a 10-minute break, your brain has tremendous capacity to relax.
So, you know,
but can I cut you off so we can take more questions, given that she's about to start giving me that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a sign.
Because they're gonna take us off the stage.
Yeah. We're gonna go to this side of the room now.
Please go ahead. I have a 10-year-old daughter. My husband tells me that I'm always treating life as it's me against the world. What advice would you give to someone that is raising a 10-year-old daughter to try not to pass that along to her?
Oh, gosh. I have a 13-year-old daughter right now. And the me against the world thing, I feel that. I try to be so careful, like Natalie was saying, not to say things that she's going to repeat. But the other thing I have to try to remember is that our children are not us. So one thing I might just let you off the hook on a little bit is don't worry too much that your daughter is a carbon copy of you and that everything you've lived through is just going to automatically get handed down to her and you have to find a way to prevent that. Do you know what I mean? They're living in a different world than we grew up in. So know that she's out there surrounded by people who aren't the same people who surrounded us. They're getting different messages than we did, which is a wonderful thing. And I don't know if that answers your question, but it's comforting to me.
It is.
Thank you, Mary Laura. Now to the other side of the room.
Hi, thank you. I have a quick question. I tend to see myself comparing myself to other moms and other women, and how do you stop yourself from doing it? Because I sometimes look at them and say, she's got her shit together, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
So I'll take that one, because I got lots of things wrong. So first of all, I'll say, and this sort of mentality started because my husband would point out an imperfection of, I leave the lights on, and when I leave a room, I leave the lights on. I know, shock and horror. It's basically an offense in our house. And I said, look, with all of my imperfections, there's a whole lot of good stuff. And you married all of it, the leave the lights on, electricity waster. I'm really sorry, planet. I'm doing my best in other parts. But there's a lot of good stuff. And it's more important that you focus on you and your strengths. And because you know what? We all have the thing that we don't measure up. Right? And so the faster that you can get to a good place, and I can get to, I'm saying this from like myself too, it's like self-therapy too, like the faster that we can, and you say it all the time, like focus, you know, there's a lot of strength in your ability to focus on the good, like a lot of strength. You know, I once was talking with, they had somebody come in and teaching us about coaching at Accenture, and I wanted to vent on something, but she didn't want me to focus on that. She wanted me to focus on the positive parts of that situation. And I said, but just maybe I could just vent for like 10 minutes. Like, maybe we could just do that first, and then I'll get back. And she's like, absolutely not. I'm not letting you bathe in the negativity. Like, you made a comment. We're already spending too much time on that. Now focus on all the positives. And it goes the same thing with all of us. I mean, I was telling Reshma, like, when we were sitting down, I'm horrible at cooking, even though in my mind I'm a chef. You know, I run slower than a turtle, and I am totally a runner in my mind. You know, and I'm choosing to believe those things and just focus on the positive side of what I'm doing.
And I just want to quickly add, because this is for all of us. There, in Buddhism, there's this concept of sympathetic joy. Mm. Sympathetic joy is your genuine ability to feel happy for someone else without any other implications. I think it's one of the hardest and most important skills in life. It's one of the most challenging ones for me, but the reason I bring it up is what I find is the more I practice sympathetic joy for others, the more joyful I feel in my own life. So what I do, I'm just giving you my personal practice. When I start comparing myself, like, oh, this author has her book sold more, their company is more followers, or whatever, I actually use that as a trigger to pause, and I ask myself, how can I be happy for them? And it's really hard to start, but the more I practice, the easier it is, and what that brings me is unbelievable joy in my own life. So practice sympathetic joy as a skill. It is a really tough and beautiful thing, and the benefits are all to you, because the other person doesn't know what's in your head.
Can I add one thing, too? It's all a lie. It's all a lie. Like, I think the problem with social media is we just don't tell the truth about our lives, and we don't tell the truth about our marriages, and we don't tell the truth about our struggles. And so I think that we have to remember that when we start judging ourselves, and I think all of us should make a commitment to tell the truth, to tell the hard stuff.
Yeah. I think we have time for one more question.
Good. Yeah. I'm begging. I'm begging for you guys.
Right here in the middle. And I'm on the flip side of you guys. I'm a little bit older. My sons are all in their early 20s. And I haven't found a hobby that's as fulfilling as being a mom. So I kind of miss that. So I don't know how to find a hobby.
My quick answer is follow your curiosity. I think the advice of, like, follow your passion, I never had a passion. I wasn't passionate about painting until I started painting. I was just curious what it would be like. So that's my quick advice is follow.
Like,
what's something
curiosity.
You're curious about?
I'm not sure.
Or maybe do like she says and pick something you're bad at.
Oh, yes.
And go, what would happen? What would happen if I spent a bunch of time doing this thing? It could be fun.
Once a week. Pick one thing once a week and just try it.
Suck at.
Like, make it be your, like, New Year's experience. New Year's experiment.
Thing.
Thank you. Before you all leave, we're taking a selfie. Taking a selfie. Come on with everybody. Yes.
Take a picture.
Given that we don't have any time, we're taking a selfie.
Sorry.
That's okay. We don't like our mics. Okay, here we go. We'll do our best.
All right.
By the way, my daughter says I suck at selfies. This is my bravery. There we go. I suck at selfies. Okay. All right, everyone over here, raise your hands up, and then we'll do another side. Ready?
A little bit up.
Good? Okay, one, two, three, happier now.
Happier now.
Okay, let's do it.